is a pleasure to be joined by our good friend, Brevin Knight. You know him as the Grizzlies television analyst. You also know him as the 12-year NBA point guard, Stanford graduate, but you may not know he is a future budding Champions Tour golfer. That's why he's out there every day playing 18 holes, maybe even 36. He's Brevin Knight. You can follow him on Twitter at BrevinKnight22. Hey, Brev.
What's going on there, Greg? How you feeling?
I'm doing okay. How about you? I mean, I know it's a premature ending to the season. You're used to the long run in April, May, maybe even, you know, one day we'll get into late June and win an NBA title. But for now, Brev, it's early golf season for you.
It is. It's a little bit weird. I mean, even though we all knew that, you know, from early in the year that this is going to be the outcome for this season, it still is weird to not have been getting ready for what the matchup would be, what would be best for this team, what they look like, grout tiles being put on the chairs at the arena, some of the norms that we've become accustomed to. But you know, all teams go through this. A good thing for us, at least, you can feel as though this was just a one-off.
Yeah.
Because it was the injuries that caused it.
So, Brevin, there's a lot of debate that has gone on about Jaren Jackson Jr. at the four, at the five, who do you put alongside him, all of that. Going into this offseason, what do you think is the right player to put alongside Jaren Jackson Jr.?
I like Jaren playing at the four, and to find another physical five to play next to him, I think has worked really well with him. You go back with Valanciunas, so you can go back to Marc Gasol. Then you move on to Valanciunas, you move on to Steven Adams.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be able to have someone else be able to take on that fight with other bigs in terms of the physical side of it, I think is nice to tandem him with, couple him with. And so hopefully they're able to find a legit five, a center that allows him to play the four. And then it can be you play the five in spot situations. But I'm not a fan of just saying that Jaren's going to be our starting five and then move forward in that fashion.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. Now, are you thinking veteran, big man, that they can get via a trade or free agency, or are you thinking if they get lucky in the draft lottery and pick high enough to take one of those centers that are being looked at, like a Sarr, like a Klingon, but a young guy who would be thrown into the fire immediately, or maybe even both? So what's your thoughts on which direction they go in as far as a big man?
If you are thinking and thinking that the window for this team to still win a championship realistically can't be that many years down the road,
mm-hmm.
It will have to be something that you're thinking is somewhere in the near future. So if you can find a vet who is a good screener, rim runner, rebounder, can be an adequate playmaker from the elbow, top of the key area, so that they can throw him the ball and there can be movement off of that guy, then I like a veteran guy in that position more than going out and getting a young guy that you're going to have to teach and learn how to not just play with the guys, but what the NBA game mm-hmm. stands for. And now the flip side of that is I haven't watched enough of these young guys in college to give a true assessment of will they help in terms of their skill. One of them can be skilled enough that they can help right now. I haven't watched them, but in terms of the knowledge of the game, then it would be nice to have someone that understands the position right now
mm-hmm.
so that at least you eliminate that one aspect of the learning curve with this team.
You obviously watch every game very, very closely. You're right there. You're watching it happen and breaking it down. Why doesn't Jaren get more rebounds?
I think that the big thing is and I wanted to go back and look and see what his rebound numbers were in college and see was he a big rebound. Sometimes when guys are shot blocking defenders, they're not big rebounding defenders because a lot of your time is spent swiping at shots that are being taken.
So are you out of position? Are you out of position, brother, when you're trying to do that?
I wouldn't call it out of position, but you put yourself in a position where – if I'm going to attempt to block your shot, it's hard for me to attempt to block it and rebound.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to do one or the other at some point. And so I think a lot of it for him is because the instinct is to go block the shot, then in some ways the instinct to just go rebound the ball has taken a hit. And so it just becomes a mind. Then the other thing is, like I said, the luxury of having those other guys next to you doesn't make you feel like you've got to be the guy to be the rebounder. When you got Mark, when you have Valanciunas, when you have Steven Adams, and guys of that nature that are there, then you tend to, they'll get the rebounds, I do the other things. And I thought this year was almost more of, don't let my guy get it, y'all go get it. And so that's why I think we saw our guards be so good with rebounding the ball this season. But it's something that I think for him is watch some film, see where position-wise can you be in position better, and to be able to grab rebounds. But rebounding is an art form. It's not something you just go out there and do.
He in college, he averaged 5.8 rebounds per game, and playing less than 22 minutes per game.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. It's like rebounding has never been a huge, huge part of his game. Now, if you can get him up to the 6-7 rebounds a game with all of the other things that he does, and now if he's blocking two shots a game, he's giving you 20 points on this end, get some assists, then I think that makes up for. And the other guys on the team, you got to know that this is who he is. So that means that around that, you got to put guys around him who are good rebounders, whether it be from the big position or from the guard position.
The great Brevin Knight joining us on the Sissy's Log Cabin guest line. So, Brev, I remember last offseason, last summer, once Marcus Smart was acquired, and the thought was, oh, I wonder how that's going to work with Bane and Ja and Marcus. We look forward to watching that. Unfortunately, this past season, you didn't see that because everybody was hurt. You saw a very, very small sample size. So, and I know anything's possible in the offseason with wheelings and dealings, but with the assumption that Marcus is back in the fold, what do you expect to see from those three guys? Do you expect Marcus to be a starter? Do you think he'll come off the bench? Because, again, you hated that now as another year has passed, and we still don't know how that combination works.
Yeah, I got the same feeling that I had even when we acquired him, was that no issue with the three of them playing together, but you are very small with the three of them playing together. And I thought, and what they were able to find this season in Vince Williams Jr. is that you can find a size wing player who can be sort of your 3-and-D guy if you wanted him to play alongside Dez and Ja. And if they don't go out and get another point guard of some sort, then now Marcus becomes your backup point guard, but he also becomes some of the punch that you'll need off of the bench. And I always say between Gigi Jackson, Brandon Clark comes back with the fire. You know, if what happens with Zaire, how he plays, how does Jake LaRavia keep moving forward? Like, you need somebody that when you look down at your bench, you can say there's somebody here on the bench who can go out and do something different than the guys on the floor. If you don't want to look at your bench and say, well, really, none of these guys are going to be better than the guys that we have in the game right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it just gives the luxury of doing that. And that's not to say that he wouldn't finish games with the other two, because that's how it worked out. I just think in terms of matchups, in terms of what you're able to do with guys coming off the bench, it would be nice to have him as another as a luxury piece to say, now you go in, because he can change a game. Gigi can change a game. Brandon Clark can change a game. And so I think it would be a nice mix to have and an option to have with your bench players.
With Gigi, certainly the year took a turn, and everybody figured he was going to be the hustle the entire year. All things happen. He's up and he performed well with the Grizzlies. Going into next year, like, how do you see where he fits in? And how big of a challenge is it especially for a guy as young as he is, to now when everybody's back, to figure out how you fit in a team with other stars instead of, you know, playing useless games where you could kind of shoot whenever you wanted to?
I think that's where the understanding of what it's going to take to win kicks in. And I think that Gigi has enough respect for those other guys that he will fall into what his role would be. But I think it can still be a big role because, like I just said, you're gonna need bench guys. And the reality of it is, fellas, guys are gonna get hurt next year. And with that, then you're gonna still need some capable players. And so that's what he is. And I think that the difference in his role is the field goal attempts won't be there. Maybe not playing the amount of minutes that he played this year at a high clip, but his play is going to be instrumental in this team being good. I think that is the message that you get across. Keep working on your skills. Get stronger. Understand positioning. I like how they threw him out there defensively to guard multiple people, really good guards, some bigger wing players, something to mix it up for him. But I think the message is you keep growing and being the player that you are. Take good shots on the offensive end, hustle, make the plays that you've made, and his role will continue to grow with the more time he gets on the floor with those guys. But there has to be, at least at the beginning of the year, a little bit of a mental adjustment in terms of the shots that you get, but it does have to change how aggressive or the style of play that he has.
All right, Brevin, let's talk a little bit about the playoffs. We got the two final playing games tonight. We'll see what happens there. Lakers will draw Denver. They had them in the Western Conference final last year and got swept. I can't imagine that they're going to give them much competition. Is this going to be Denver and Boston and it's going to be simple, or is there going to be some complications and some excitement and some upsets?
Heck no, it won't be simple. We all think Denver, you give them their due respect. They come back with their team intact, coaches intact, everybody knowing exactly what they want to do. The big, you lose one Brown, but another Brown steps in for him and as younger and a little bit more athletic to kind of play that role for them. And so, yeah, you can continue in the West, put them as the favorite, but it's not the favorite hands down by any stretch of imagination. Mm-hmm. And I think that once you get to the eight that are in, after you get the final two, the final team tonight, that anybody in the West to win the West at that point, because injuries are a part of it, but just in the fact that these are all one-offs in these games, and enough of these teams, the teams have enough talent. I mean, you're talking about the Lakers being in a 7-seed situation, the A-seed team tonight, whichever team wins will be at a deficit because they'll be missing major players as they mm-hmm. go into their series. But I don't think it's – I think the Lakers will not – The Lakers will not get swept again by Denver. And I will go as far as to say that the Lakers could win two games, could win three games. They could win the series.
Really?
If LeBron James doesn't have to do everything. Mm-hmm. If they can get one of their role guys to be able to step up, they have the size and they have the talent to be able to deal with Denver and how they play. Because once people talk about the size of Denver, once they get past Jokic, their size diminishes very much.
Right.
Like they don't play another big center on the floor. That's why I talked about DeAndre Jordan being so crucial to them in the playoffs, where they're going to need him at some point. And so the Lakers have with their squad, they have a fantastic chance of being able to have a huge upset in that one.
With a team like Oklahoma City, we've obviously seen it gone through here with the Grizzlies. Like, they're obviously really, really good. You're the number one seed for a reason. But how big of a deal is it to have playoff experience? And going in as a number one seed, how difficult is it for them because they just haven't been in that position?
I think it's twofold in that. It's difficult because, yes, you haven't been there. Guys really don't know what that environment is going to be like. You don't really understand how hard the other teams are going to play against you. But conversely is, nobody has high expectations for them being the number one seed. Everyone has them losing at some point in time. Mm-hmm. And so it's not as if you went in as the number one seed and now you're the Boston Celtics and you lose before getting to the final. Now that feels like everything was lost. You didn't, because the expectation of them to be there and be in the championship is across the board, not across the board for Oklahoma City. And a little bit of that, Daigneault can use a little bit of that as fuel for his team in that, number one, no one expects us to be here. We're not supposed to be here. And now they don't even have us winning a first round. But let's go out and play and let's show who we really are. And I think that the rest of the country will get a chance to see when you put together a very good team and that plays team basketball and hat, but within that, you have the dynamic player that they have in SGA, mm-hmm. it puts you in a position to be able to win a lot of basketball games. And just because it's not sexy to the rest of the country, people don't believe it. But if you walk in, if any team steps on that floor, half stepping a little bit against Oklahoma City, they will get beat.
By the way, before we let you go, who would you have as the MVP?
It's hard to go up against Jokic, but if the player for me that is who I can see is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander,
right?
And it's because he was able to do it to be the star on his team. He did it for a long stretch of the season without having to miss the games. Wasn't out. Was available for the majority of the time. It's hard to go against Jokic because the team aspect, they're there again, and what they did. But I could see SGA being a guy who was very, very close on his heel.
Do you got any big golf trips set up for the off season?
We're going to play a couple of TPC courses. We'll go up to Michigan, and we'll go up to Wisconsin and play. May go to Erin Hills and play all of those courses there.
Nice. Kohler? You go to Kohler in Wisconsin?
Yeah, Kohler is good. Kohler has a lot of courses there. But the problem is, eventually my wife will say, "Well, do you live at home?" I gotta figure out how I'm going to finagle and space all of those out.
Yeah, the conniving we do as men trying to figure out how we can get around certain things.
Do you want your Giants to draft a quarterback next week?
I do not. I want the Giants to draft someone that is dynamic in their skill set on the offensive end. Whether that be the wide receiver from LSU. Mm-hmm. Someone who is a playmaker. I think that's the next step. We lost a huge playmaker in Saquon Barkley, and really haven't had the receiving threat. You can almost go back to Plaxico Burress. I mean, I guess you say Odell Beckham was that in some way, but to have someone of size also, and I would love to get a wide receiver. I'm not off Daniel Jones yet. And I think we've invested too much to just say that's it without ever having a real offensive line again.
That's a great point. Yeah. Well, we'll see. I like the guy, but you're right. He has to stand upright to have any success. Good luck to your Giants. Great to talk to you again. Hopefully we get to do it sometime during the offseason, and then look forward again to you with Pete and the gang calling games once again next season. He's Grizzlies television analyst, 12-year NBA point guard, Stanford graduate and future Champions Tour golfer. He is the one and only Brevin Knight. You can follow him on Twitter at BrevinKnight22. Thank you, Brev.
Oh, man, good talking to you guys. You guys know my number. Just give me a buzz.
Sounds great.
Thanks, man.